Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you, one and all, for being with us again for what's going to be, I think, a very, very exciting show. My guest is Roxanne Musso, who was on the show a couple of months ago, just before she left on a walkabout. And she is finally, we've been communicating through Facebook, but she hasn't had a good connection to be on the show. And tonight she's in Perth, Australia, and is going to join us. But as soon as we solve a couple of technical problems, but she's going to tell us what's been going on Walkabout. So tonight's Metaphysical Musing, I'm going to talk a little bit about Walkabout and what Walkabout is and what it means. The idea of a walkabout is to go off traditionally. Well, walkabout comes from the Aboriginal Australian tradition. And at a certain age, a young man goes out into the outback with just what he can carry, says goodbye to his family, and for a period of time lives by his skills and his wits, learning about himself and learning from the land who he is and what his strengths are, and getting the message of what his life is going to be about. And there's a similar tradition in Native American tribes called the Vision Quest, which is very similar, going out with carrying almost nothing to live off the land and talk to the spirit world and find out what it is that you're supposed to be doing in this lifetime. So many healers, many people on the spiritual path wind up doing some form of walkabout, leaving what they know behind. The tradition is that you sell or give away everything that you own and go with only what you can carry. Go to a place where you probably don't know anybody and don't have any idea what you're going to do next, and wait to be guided and to be shown by the circumstances what to do next. And it's scary and it's exciting, and I've done it a couple of times, and there is nothing quite like it. There's nothing quite like going off having no idea what's going to happen, and letting it happen, letting it unfold. So for people that have never done that, this stuff, I'm sure, sounds crazy and scary. And for those of us that have done it, it also frequently feels crazy and scary. But when you do it, it's an extraordinary experience. Getting that communication with your internal voice and being able to listen to your own guidance, but also looking out into the world and finding out how to hear the communication from the spirit world, from the physical world, from the people around you, from everything. And so tonight's guest is off on walkabout, and I'm going to let her tell the stories. And when we chatted on Facebook very briefly a few hours ago, she said, and I have a story from this morning. So it just continues. So let's see if we've solved all our technical problems. And my guest, Roxanne Musso, is with us. You with us, Roxanne?
I sure am.
There you are. On the other side of the world, as far away as you could possibly get.
Yes, very true.
So first of all, let's tell people who you are and, you know, what you were doing. You're from Canada, from the foothills of the Rockies, and you do healing work. Why don't you say a little bit about what you do?
You know, it's funny. I think the longer I'm on journey, the harder I'm finding it is to define everything that I do.
Because it changes.
Yes, big changes. Basically, my title has been Divine Feminine Alchemist, Spiritual Guide and Mentor. And so I've been working with people who find themselves, you know, in those challenging situations and in ruts and want to make those changes, but aren't sure how to or what the blocks are that they've created to stop themselves from moving forward into that new space to create the life they want to live. And so I use various methods to do that, including working with the angels, fairies. That list is growing longer the longer I'm away, mm-hmm. who's showing up for me to work with. Right. Energy healing. And, you know, honestly, I've really come to the clear conclusion that just basic old-fashioned conversation, intuition, and empathy is, you know, one of my strongest assets and tools to really help people, you know, move forward and step into that new realm that they're looking for in their own lives. So that's the basic rundown.
And so when we spoke to you last time, you were a few days before you were going to set out on this walkabout, and yes. Tell us what you thought was going to happen and, you know, what your guidance had told you so far at that point.
At that point in time, my guidance was to go to different cultures around the world. I would be led either through dream or vision where I should go. So I knew I was starting in Bali. The second place I would go to would be Australia, and then the third would be New Zealand. I didn't know where in any of these places. Bali had just fallen into place probably about 4 days before we had our interview the last time. So I knew I'd be up in a village, and that's all I knew. And that I was to go find dance in all these cultures, specifically women's dances. In indigenous or historical cultures, and I was supposed to bring them home into my body and then bring them home onto the land and then bring them to the people that needed them. And so that's been my guiding. And I thought, okay, perfect. You know, I'm going to go. Dance is going to magically appear in my life. I'm going to dance in all these places and people are going to love me and everything's going to be perfect. And I'll take pictures and it'll be a great experience.
So you set out for Bali.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, on a 3-day journey. It took me 3 days to get there with all my flight transfers and layovers. I landed in Bali at 1:30 in the morning on March 2nd, and there was a driver waiting for me at the airport. I had arranged to do volunteer work through an organization I had heard about through friends, so I had a place to stay. My room and board is covered in exchange for my volunteer work. And so I found out, as I'm completely exhausted and in the airport, that one, I have no access to money because none of the airport ATMs would give me money, and I was told that that would work. And so I didn't know how I was going to pay the driver. And then my next big thing was, instead of it being an hour and a half drive, because that's what Google says based on the distance to the village that I was going to, it was a 4-hour drive.
It was how long?
After 4 hours. Uh-huh. And I didn't understand why. I was like, but Google said an hour and a half. And I was exhausted. It turned out that because the roads, as you get up into the mountains, are so small. I don't even think they're roads or streets. They're more like, you know, a widened garden path, literally. you have to go very slow. And so that cuts your travel time. Well, actually, it increases your travel time because of how slow you have to go.
Right.
So, yeah, I got there. We stopped several times as we were going through villages and small cities looking for, again, an ATM. I finally found one. After stopping, I think we stopped at least 10, maybe the 11th one. I can't remember because I was exhausted. I don't even think at that point in time I realized how tired I was. Finally, I was able to take money out. So I had enough to pay the driver. And I was like, good, because I don't want to get off in a country that I know nothing about. And so we continued on our way, and I landed up in the village of Kayaputi at 5:30 in the morning in the dark on a tiny, not even street. And had a pretty scary experience. The driver tried to take advantage, and so I stopped that really quickly. But the whole village knew I was staying in this place alone. So it was quite a eye-opening experience. And I am a woman traveling out in the world alone, now in a country, in a tiny village where I know nobody and I don't know the language. And so I sat in fear that first morning as the sun came up, as I was sitting in the village house in in Kayaputi.
And what happened that morning?
You know, as I sat there, I didn't know what to do. And I figured the best thing that I can do at this point in time is really, you know, go to bed, one. I figured after traveling 3 days and that long ride and, you know, the fear that was coming so strongly, the best thing I could do is just take a nap. And then, you know, from there, get up and sort what was going to be next. And so for the next week, I did that. I slept. I had a hard time sleeping because new place all by myself. Didn't know the language to speak to the gardener who cared for the villa that I was staying in. And he came to check on me several times, which was lovely. But I was in fear. I was just in fear. What am I supposed to do now? I can't communicate with anybody because I only managed to learn from sayings, which was great, except for I didn't understand the answers to things like, how are you? And which way is this to go here?
Right.
Because I didn't speak the language. And so it became, from that point forward, after that nap when I got up, it became a matter of setting myself a challenging task. Okay, today I'm going to go out into the village and find some food. And so I would do anything to delay. I was like, I read so many novels that first week. Like, I had my Kindle there on my iPhone. And yeah, I read every single novel on my Kindle and on my Kobo Books app, because I was just so scared to leave. And because I didn't understand the culture, the workers would walk down. There's rice paddies everywhere. It was really gorgeous. And the workers would pass every morning the villa that I was staying in. But I didn't understand. They would say, do you sleep here? And it would only be the men that would speak to me. And so I'd be like, nope, I'm not sleeping here. Because I didn't understand why they were asking. And after having that initial, you know, advance that was very unwelcome, I didn't want anybody to know I was there by myself. And they'd look at me confused, like, but you're here and it's 5:30 in the morning.
Right.
And so every day I would set a task. I was lucky up the street from where I was staying, there was a new hotel that had opened up not too long ago. They had Wi-Fi. And so I was able to go there a couple days on my phone. I found out my laptop at some point in time had died between my layover in the Philippines and landing in Bali. So I just had my phone, and I got online on Facebook and just really dug into my support network at home and told them, like, I'm freaking out. I'm scared. I don't want to leave the villa. And was really pushed and loved hard and heavy from home to, you know, challenge yourself, step out. We know this is your first time traveling the world, but it's time. And so you have to find a way to work through the fear. And so that's what I did. Every day I either went for Wi-Fi or down to the village, and I just waited. The woman that was supposed to connect with me had a death in the family and a very sick three-year-old. And so that's why I was literally just dropped and left. That was not how it was supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as much as I say that, I think that's exactly how it was supposed to happen now, because the power of stepping through those fears has shifted this entire journey for me. And dragonflies started showing up. There's lots of dragonflies all over in Bali. But I didn't take notice of it at first. I was like, oh, that's pretty. But then all of a sudden, there wasn't just like, you know, five or six throughout the day. There would be like seven dragonflies sitting on, you know, the patio where I would sit during the day to read. They would land on me. I'm like, okay, well, I know enough about animal medicine. I don't know very much enough that when I start getting landed on, and, you know, there's a powerful message coming through here. And not only would they land on me, there was one particular one that would show up wherever I would go. I don't know or think that it was the same one, but there was a green and black dragonfly that would land on me and look at me and cock his head at me one way and then another repeatedly. And I was like, this is so weird. Okay, fine. I'll look it up. And dragonfly is all about transformation, about going with flow, you know, and about, you know, realizing that, you know, things have to die away for new to come in place and for new beauty to appear. And so it really became for me that idea of, you know, I am in fear. I can accept that, but I have to allow myself to flow through it and find the faith. So that was the start of Bali for me.
Yeah. And then the gal that you were supposed to connect with eventually did show up, right?
Yes, she did. So I came to a point where I wasn't sure whether or not it would be a wise idea to bring out the whole issue around the driver who tried to take advantage of me. And I really struggled with it because I, you know, in some countries, it's your fault, period. And I thought, you know, I don't really want to go there. However, I kept having this repeated, insistent urge of, you need to talk about this. You need to contact the woman who made the arrangements for you to stay in Bali and let her know what's going on and what you're feeling. And so I did that. The one of the days that I had, you know, bribed myself with banana fritters there. They call it pisang goreng. And there was a place in the village that made them. And I was like, okay, here's the deal. Bribe with food. If you go do this, you can have banana fritters after. Done. I can do it. Banana fritters are my reward. And so I ended up going, and I wrote a very long email to the woman of the organization that set up this piece of my Bali journey. Just let her know, like, this is what happened. This is how I'm feeling. I've been alone for a whole week. I don't know what to do, and I really need some help here. And once I made that reach out and brought my truth forward, the response was overwhelming and comforting and loving and supportive and immediate. I had an answer right away. She got in touch with her daughter, who is her adopted Balinese daughter, and that's who came, and that was the woman that I had been waiting for. And so when her daughter showed up, she sat down and she said, my mom sent me this email. I don't know what's happening. I just know that you're not doing okay. What's going on? And so I told the woman who became my host sister everything that happened. And she started crying as I was sitting there sharing with her. Then I started crying. So we were a mess together on the villa patio. And it was that moment that she looked at me and she said, please come and live with me, because then you'll be safe. You'll be protected within our family, because when, you know, you come into a family in Bali, you become their family. And so I was like, yes, done. And we hopped up and I packed everything in my backpack. And they had brought me a scooter that would be mine for the month. And so with my big giant backpack and my tiny backpack, I loaded myself on this scooter, and they were, her and her husband and son were riding the other scooter, and we went to her house, and I ended up living with them for the rest of the month that I was in Bali, and it was amazing.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it was quite interesting to me how truly when I moved in with the family, thank goodness Ilu, that was my host sister, spoke English. She was studying English at university, so she could translate between me and the rest of the family. But when I came here, there was an immediate and noticeable shift in how I was perceived in the village. And people all of a sudden who would ignore me before would now address me and speak to me. And the women started speaking to me because I belonged to a family, and because they accepted me, I became okay. Right. So it was very interesting. I don't know if that's a cultural thing. That's just my experience of what happened. But it was very powerful to have that shift, to go from being on my own into being accepted into a family and a community that was very hesitant about, you know, my presence at first.
And I'm trying not to prompt you with the pieces of the story that I already know.
Oh, just prompt me. What do you want me to share?
Well, whatever you want to share, but I know that you've figured out, however the arrangements were made, you wound up teaching English there.
Yes. Yeah, that was my original purpose in being up, well, half my purpose besides the dance, was I would be teaching English to the village children. It kind of blossomed on its own in that Ilu arranged for, originally I was supposed to teach for the village of Manduk, which is just the next village over from Kaiputi. But with my move from the villa into Ilu and her family's home, it became the children of Kaiputi who actually lived in a very close radius and who I had fairly daily interaction with. They were very shy when I first started working with them. And Ilu and I had to do it together because I didn't have enough Indonesian to translate when I first started. Right. The other piece that kind of flowed was there was a hotel that opened up about two villages over from where we were staying in Jiseng. And they had four young staff members between the ages of 19 and 25, just young men and women, that had English. Well, three of them did. One had very basic, like, hello and goodbye, and that was it. And they needed somebody to work with those four students to help build their hospitality language. And so I was teaching at both places, and very different but very profound experiences for me in the respect that they give teachers there. Students, when I was done teaching, would bow over my hand and touch my hand to their forehead as a way of thanking me and honoring the knowledge that I was sharing with them, and made me almost cry every time they did it. Very different from my experience as a Canadian public school teacher.
Yeah.
And they, especially the village children, really delighted in teaching me their language. And one of the tricky pieces I learned about language is that in Bali, Indonesian is the main language of Indonesia, and so they all learn that. But there's also Balinese. So some of the people up in the village don't speak very good Indonesian because they've been born and raised and never left the village. And so they just speak the regional Balinese. So not only was I learning Indonesian, I was also learning Balinese side by side. So sometimes I'd say something and it'd be half Balinese, half Indonesian, and the kids would just die laughing, you know? So yeah, it was, that piece for me was, it was spirit building in that, you know, I had something I could offer them and then also allow myself to receive back the gift of their language. And it was very profound to me. I was sitting one day and I thought, you know, I'm only here for a month. And so, and I have a translator most of the time. Ilu would do most of the translation for me. What is it like for people that move to a different country, that come to Canada or the U.S. or anywhere else in the world where they don't speak the language?
Yeah.
How much courage does that take? I know how much courage it took for me to get myself out of the villa every day the first week I was there, you know, and I thought that was like dredging up the depths of the strength that I carry in my spirit. And it just, it was a very deep and powerful realization for me of the courage that we take each as individuals to step out into the world, especially when that world feels very foreign and unknown.
Absolutely. We're going to go to break in a second. I want to make sure people know where to find you online. What's your website?
Mm-hmm. It's www.roxannemusso.com, and I'll spell that really quick. It's RoxanneMousseau.
And all of your information is there, and your blog is there, and people can connect with you. And you're also on Facebook, which is where I've been staying in touch with you. So we're going to go to break in just a minute. We will be back shortly, unless we get taller. And so don't go nowhere. We'll be back with the Farkas Files with my guest, Roxanne Mousseau from some corner of Australia. We haven't gotten to there in this story. Don't go nowhere. We'll be back.
This week's episode, Rattlesnake at the Pond.
Oh, Johnny, skipping rocks at the pond sure is fun.
Hey, look, a moving stick.
That ain't a stick. That's a rattlesnake.
Sassy, we're in danger.
Good idea, Sassy. Go get Mr. Gunderson. You will in a second, but first you'd like to tell us something we may not know about animal shelters in the United States?
It's getting close, Sassy.
Approximately 8 million pets enter shelters each year, the majority of which are in shelters because of owner-related issues that the animals have no control over?
Sassy the rattlesnake! Save us, Sassy!
What, Sassy? You wish you were videotaping this? Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
So coming to the stage is a really funny guy. Y'all know him. Put your hands together. Give it up for George Wilborn.
Folks, why won't we go to the doctor? My uncle called. Speech all slurred, complaining his arm's numb. He calls everybody under the sun. Aunt Peyton, his old army buddy George. He even called my daughter Tierra, because, you know, she's got a year of nursing. Everyone thinks he needs to go to the doctor, including me. So he said, well, will you take me? I'm like, I'm on the road. He goes, I'll wait. Stroke's no joke. If you or someone you love have symptoms of stroke, don't call family. Don't dial a friend. Don't wait. It may be too late. Dial 911. Time loss is brain loss. Seriously, dial 911.
Learn all the symptoms of a stroke at strokesnojoke.org. That's strokesnojoke.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it?
Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on and lost cat stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the inventnow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest Roxanne Musso, who is on Walkabout and is talking to us from Perth, Australia, having gone from Canada to Bali, which is where we left her with the story. And, you know, you have to tell this story in such a way that we catch up with you in Perth.
Yes, we're getting there. we're going to jump right back in. Are you ready, David? Buckle your seatbelt, because we're in one of the fast-forward version of Bali.
Okay, I'm good with the acceleration and, you know, deceleration injuries.
We'll bandage you up after, I promise.
Okay.
Being a healer has its good points. Anyways, I think one of my biggest struggles that really became apparent to me in Bali is, although I was really enjoying the teaching English and I was, you know, tootling around and seeing some really beautiful things, It's a gorgeous, they call it the Island of the Gods for a reason. It's beautiful there, very tropical. I wasn't finding any dance. There was little leads here and there that I was putting my feelers out and, you know, taking the action steps on contacting people, but nothing was really coming back. And my visa, I was supposed to stay in Bali for 3 months, but my visa was not extendable. So it became very clear about a week and a half, 2 weeks in, that I only had 2 weeks left. My visitor visa would extend at the end of the month. I had 30 days only, and then I would have to leave the country.
Right.
So I started really struggling with the idea of I'm failing. I've come out into the world to find dances and cultures, and I'm not, and I haven't, and maybe I'm not doing enough. Maybe when I wasted all that time reading novels, I should have been out, you know, and the should've, would've, could've, and that self-doubt and that, you know, sense of self-torturing was really strong inside of me. And I, you know, I had a moment of clarity and I went, oh, wait, right. I can just talk to spirit realm. I can just ask spirit because they talk. Hello? Right. Okay. So I actually sat down one day when I had some time. My classes magically got canceled that day, which made me laugh. And I thought, okay, right, you're clearing my plate so I can sit down and hear what you have to say. So that day I sat and was finally able to channel the message through from Dragonfly, but also channel some, you know, guidance around the dancing. And basically the message that continually has come through since the start of this journey is trust. And I'm gonna back up. Just before I left, I asked a woman in Calgary, she's a local artist who also, you know, makes buttons. And I said, can you make a button for my backpack? It can be whatever, just think about me, meditate. And she looked at me and she hugged me and she said, I have the word already that's gonna go on that button. And that button is actually on my backpack, made by Belinda Fireman. In Calgary, and that word that she was inspired with that night and then later gave me in this button that she made is trust. And mm-hmm. So that's been a very powerful theme that's come through. So as I did that reading, I really tapped into my sense of failure, that I'm failing this journey that you've set for me. What do you want me to do? And one of the most powerful messages that came through was, just stepping out on the journey was enough, that I need to accept that if it doesn't turn out the way I thought it would, it doesn't mean I failed, because I need to put my focus on what I have learned, what it has brought into my life, and the powerful shifting that's happened, especially in the realm of, it was highlighted, I'm having all these very powerful dreams that are clearing away a lot of old stuff that I was carrying, and a lot of grief and sorrow and old stories and beliefs that I've held on to for a very long time are being worked out very powerfully through symbols coming through my dreams. And the Earth Mother, the Great Mother, Spirit, whatever you want to call her, came through in this reading I gave for myself. And she said, it is solely enough, Roxanne, that you said yes. And it was even more of enough and a gift in service to me that you stepped out into the world. So if you don't find dance, know that you've done enough for me already. And I cried.
Right.
And I struggled with that message, because how can it, you've asked me to do something specific. How can it be enough if I haven't done it yet? But that message of trust, just trust, and not trust because you know it's going to work out, just blind trust, you know, mm-hmm. throw it all up. And let the pieces fall where they may and have trust that they're going to fall as they're supposed to. And the next day after doing that reading, I was then connected with a master dance teacher in Bali and was able only to have one dance lesson with him on the basics of Balinese dance. But he allowed me to come to his classes that he drove 2 hours for to host for the local villages in the area I was staying in. Twice or three times a week, depending on his schedule. And so I was able to learn about Balinese dance, and it's quite beautiful, sometimes almost scary to watch, because not only is there the movement of the body, but there is mudra, there's hand positions, very much like an Indian dancing, that have a very specific meaning, right down to specific eye movements to the beat of the gamelan, which is the Balinese music played on drums, flutes, and I'm going to call them gongs because there are gongs, but there's also like other percussive instruments. Mm-hmm. Very powerful dancing, often depicting stories of the gods, of balance, chaos, destruction, rebirth. So very beautiful messages. And so I didn't get to dance the dance the way I thought I would. And I really had to start letting go of the idea of what my picture was, that bringing dance into my body would mean I had to dance it myself. But really, it became a matter of, and as I'm saying this, it's becoming so clear, I'm having a whole epiphany right now. it became a matter of creating the space by letting go through trust for dance to enter into my life in whatever way it was going to show up in the places that I was in. Mm-hmm. And that brought me to, at the end of my time in Bali, the dance teacher desperately wanted me to come and stay with him, invited me several times, but we just couldn't make it work. The end of March, by the lunar Hindu calendar, is Nipi, which is their new year. And so he was swamped with festivals and performances. I was blessed enough to get to go see a performance, and I'm hoping to post some pictures and videos now that I have a better internet connection. We'll see how that goes. So I was able to see some of that, but it meant that I just wasn't able to, because his proposal was, come live with me for your last 2 weeks. And then he's like, your last week, your last 4 days, anything, just come stay with me and we'll dance 3 times a day. But again, I just, you know, now that I'm looking back at it and I'm realizing the beautiful flow of, you know, my journey so far, the sometimes challenging flow of my journey, but very beautiful. I know it wasn't meant to be, because dance will show up in the forms that it will show up in. I just have to be open to it and accept mm-hmm. what it looks like. So the end of Bali for me ended with Nyepi, where we had a New Year's celebration and then a day of silence, which was very powerful and profound for me. And then we woke up just after midnight, which would have been April 1st, the morning of April 1st, and set off fireworks in the street to celebrate the new Hindu year. And then I left that morning to head to the airport to make my way to Perth. So, yeah.
And how long's that trip from Bali to Perth?
Well, you know, let me tell you. Very short, because after spending 3 days getting to Bali, I was like, whatever part in Australia is the closest, that's where I'm flying to. So Perth is only about a 3.5-hour flight from Bali.
So it was 3.5 hours?
Yes, yeah, just 3.5 hours. And then easy flight, beautiful flight. And then, you know, it's funny, when I was at the airport in Bali getting ready to come, I just had this deep sense of I'm moving stronger into the current of the flow that I'm swimming in on this journey. And I couldn't shake that feeling. I was like, that's just silly, Roxanne, you know, because I always have that little bit left in me that just wants to brush aside that intuition. You know, oh, no. Even on the plane. And the minute my feet touched the soil in Perth, Australia, I felt this sense of rightness, of coming home, of stepping into a place where the shadow work would be more profound, but so would the light that I discover here. And for the past few weeks, that's exactly what it's been for me. No matter what's being revealed, it is coming with a lot of beautiful things as well, and lots of very deep healing for me.
So did you have plans when you got to Perth, or what was your arrangement when you got there?
I actually did have plans. I actually had 3 hosts set up where I would go work on their farms for about 2 weeks at 2 weeks each. So I knew I would land in Perth. I was staying at a hostel the night that I got here. I was pretty excited about that. It was my first hostel stay ever. So landed, I would stay at that hostel, and I would leave for a place called Bridgetown, which is, Perth is in Western Australia. It's the west coast of Australia. And so Bridgetown is just southwest of there. And so I knew I would leave on that. I got here the Tuesday. I would leave on the Wednesday. That didn't happen. That was my plan. And I would stay there for 2 weeks. I would go up to Swanbourne, which is North Perth, for 2 weeks. And then I would head up to Gidgidanup, which is about 45 minutes north of the city of Perth, and work up there for a couple of weeks as well. And some of that is still in place. But, you know, as this journey has a spirit of its own, right. What has happened is, sorry, I cut out there. So what has happened is on the Wednesday I was supposed to leave, I missed my bus to Bridgetown. And I thought, you know, I should really be upset about this. People are supposed to be meeting me. But I didn't feel upset. I just had this overwhelming sense of I have to stay in Perth for today. And I don't know why, but I called up the bus company. Normally they won't transfer your ticket after the time your bus has left, but they were super. They were like, no problem. We'll book you in tomorrow. And they didn't charge me anything. And I was like, okay, weird. All right, I'm going to go with it. Thank you. Thank you, universe. More, please. And I decided, you know, I still have $50 left to my name, so that's what it'll cost me to stay in the hostel overnight, no problem. So I went back to the hostel, booked in, was lucky enough to get the same room I had the night before with two amazing women, and ended up connecting with both of them that day and discussing why I was so far from home and what I was doing. And in my conversation with one of my roommates, found that she is very connected to angels and crystals, and the other one was an astrologer. And I felt like, oh yeah. And I'm like, oh goodness. Spirit's working hard right now. And I felt very moved at that moment to offer an exchange of services with the astrologer. I thought it'd be really good to check in to see, you know, what all my charts are saying and what the planetary movements are doing as they dance their dance and, you know, make my world a little crazy. And so she readily agreed. And I actually spent that afternoon receiving and then in service doing some very beautiful healing work with this astrologer, and was able to help her clear just some really big pieces that she was struggling with and just bring peace for. I was so blissful after. I thought, okay, well, I might have to move to Perth. This is what it's going to feel like all the time. So it was very profound. I don't know much about astrology. I've always been fascinated by it. But one of the big things that came out of that is I'm in a Plutonian arc where I'm at. I use the word arc, could be totally the wrong word. But basically, I'm in a place where I have to be very careful about taking risks, but also where that shadow will be brought to light. And it was a big thing that she also talked about was my moon, and my neonatal chart is in Cancer, which means although I'm a hard-headed warrior Aries for my sun sign and a lot of my other houses, that piece is my emotions and the depth and my emotional makeup. And that is actually at the surface of my chart when I'm here in this area of Western Australia, which means I get to bring out and meet a lot of those inner needs. And desires and that softer piece of myself. And it was very profound and powerful for me. And I was just like, whoa, this whole thing's way bigger than I thought.
So I think you were on the bus to one of the horse ranches, horse stations, I guess. Yes. They call them out there. Yes. When we were Facebook chatting. Yes. Back and forth.
Yes. That was the next day after that reading and that healing session that the astrologer and I had shared. And I'm finding them very hypersensitive, and I have been since the end of Bali, more than I ever have been. And so I had contacted you on Facebook, so I was freaking out. There was a man talking, and I knew not only from conversations that you and I have had, you know, on Facebook, but I could just feel that just talking, you know, we see people that we say, oh, they're schizophrenic on the street, or, you know, that person's talking to themselves. Oh, no, he was having a full-on conversation and I was only hearing his half, but it was making the hair on my neck stand up. And it was really uncomfortable. And my stomach started clenching. And so I'd hopped on Facebook and got in touch with you and was like, help. Can you do something, Lulu? This is very uncomfortable. And I so appreciate that you were there and so supportive that day. Because after we had talked, yeah, it was almost like there was this bubble around me. And I was good. And my trip was beautiful up to Bridgetown. My time was finding when I land in a new place, it actually takes me about a week to settle in to, mm-hmm. you know, shift out of my old protective stance and stories to allow what's going to happen. But the more I'm having to have this repeated, the easier it's becoming. And so I ended up leading out horse rides when I was working in Bridgetown, learned how to milk a cow, learned how to make butter from raw milk, and just that feeds a part of me where, you know, just that farm girl in me that I've always wanted to be. And so that was pretty exciting.
Cool.
On the spirit side in Bridgetown, still powerful dreams and lots of changing, lots of symbols coming up and just drawing me deeper into the dance that this journey is.
So that was a couple of weeks that you were.
Yeah. I was there for 12 days when all was said and done. My second host, where I was supposed to volunteer, kind of ditched me and didn't get in touch with me. So I was supposed to leave the Saturday and had no place to go. Only had enough money in my bank account to stay at the hostel back in Perth for one night. And I was just like, okay, spirit, no readings are coming through right now, which is fine. You know, I'll do what in service I'm called to do, but I need a plan. And we had, it was the start of the school break last week, like last weekend. So we had lots of guests because the farm I was staying at has chalets and is a farm stay. So people can come and they feed the animals with us and we take them on rides and lots of fun to be had. There was people that came in and we were watching a calf being born and we were talking about, you know, Canada and why I was there and all the pieces of my journey. And this woman looked at me and she goes, well, if you don't find a place, you need to come stay with us in Perth. And I was like, ha ha, okay. You know, thinking what person in their right mind invites a complete, like literally I'd met her 2 hours before during the birth of a calf. Who does that, right? Well, that's where I'm sitting right now, in their beautiful home, being so welcomed by them and trying to work out, you know, where I'll go next. My plan is still to go to Gidjigan up next, but I'm just waiting to hear back from my host there. They don't get home from their travels until this Friday. So, that brings us right up to present day.
Well, that experience of people just going, oh, yeah, come stay with me is not unusual when you're on walkabout. People just get it.
You know, yeah, I I've heard of that. You know, I've heard that. I didn't believe it. Like that happens to other people. That does not happen to me. You guys are crazy. No, I was wrong, and I'll own that. I'm saying it on air for all of our listeners to hear. And my mom is actually listening right now, so she's probably sitting there gaping and giggling because not often do I like to say I'm wrong, but I was totally wrong. And I will own that.
One of the many lessons to be learned when you're out and about.
Yes.
So, well, good for you. And you have a little bit of a respite and comfort and decent Wi-Fi. So, you know, some amenities.
Yeah.
Which is lovely.
But, and, you know, the beautiful thing about that is that, you know, I've been able to get caught up. I actually was able to, for the first time in 2 months, talk to my daughter on the phone last night. I got to talk to my mom quite briefly yesterday. And so just, you know, a little bit of that reconnecting that's bolstering, you know, me for the next part of this journey. So yeah, it's been a beautiful thing. And I am deeply moved by the spirit of, you know, receiving and by the gratitude that I feel for how this is happening. And did I mention that the Indian Ocean is a 5-minute walk from the front door of the house?
No, and those of us that are up here go, Indian Ocean is over there. So.
Yes. Apparently, if I wanted to start swimming, I'd be about 6,000 kilometers west until I hit South Africa. And I'm like, I don't think I can swim that far.
Plus, but that would be a long swim. Well, you know, we're running out of time here. And there's so much more that I'm sure you could tell us. But quickly tell us what the plan is. You're going up to the next host. And do you have more plans in Australia, or then you're going to New Zealand from there?
I've come to a place now where I jokingly and very meaningfully and deeply say, it's all a mystery.
Good.
I have these plans. I don't know what's going to happen. And that's perfectly really okay. My plan is to stay here for just over another week because I've been invited to stay for however long I need. But by that time, it should be time for me to head up to Gidjiganup. The place there is an animal sanctuary where they rescue and give a forever home to abused animals. So I'm really looking forward to that deep animal connection there. And then from there, I was thinking I will possibly head up to an area in northwestern Australia called Broome. There is a lot of Indigenous and Aboriginal population up there. I understand, but I don't know for sure. And so I will start sending some emails out next week to see about heading up that way. If that doesn't work out, I was thinking maybe I don't know.
We'll
it's
see.
It's all a mystery, David.
We'll see. So we really have to tie this up, which is too bad because we could keep talking for a long time.
We sure could.
So I want to thank you so much for taking some time to get us caught up on your adventure, and I hope we'll be able to do this again. It's so wonderful to be able to be on Walkabout with you. My guest is Roxanne Musso. Her website is RoxanneMusso.com. We will hear more from her adventure on Walkabout. And Roxanne, I'll leave you with what my teacher, Cherokee medicine man called the Kitawa, said to me one interesting night. He said, you have a plan. It's good. Plans are good. It's good to have a plan. What are you going to do if your plan's not grandfather's plan?
Yes. Very true.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the big lesson.
Thank you.
Roxanne, thank you so much for being on the show. And don't drop off the line. So we'll be able to chat after we go off the air. My guest again has been Roxanne Musso, talking to us from Perth, Australia on her Walkabout. And what a gift to be able to share that with her. So if you're curious about this crazy guy David and what I do and my walkabouts, you can find out more at househealing.com, and on the contact tab is every conceivable way of getting in touch with me, including my scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute free assessment of what's going on in your situation with a person or a property or a location or whatever the problem is. See how my work might be helpful to you. So please take advantage of that. If you want more information about the Farkas Files or the archive to listen to the rest of the shows, that's at thefarkasfiles.com and also can be found on iTunes podcasts. So please check that out. And it's very exciting. I know people listen to us whenever you can fit it into your schedule all over the world. And it's kind of like Roxanne being on Walkabout. All of you are where you are and you fit it in. And I so appreciate that because that's what makes this all so much fun. So once again, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.